The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
On today's show, we're continuing our week of coverage of the Heart of the City Festival with Sid Chow Tan. He's a longtime documentary filmmaker, activist, and artist. He's talking at the festival at 3 p.m. in a virtual talk about My Art is Activism. You can find out about that and register for the 3 p.m. event Tuesday at heartofthecityfestival.com. Sid, it's really great to have you here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio with us.
Well, it's great to be here. I love being on Co-op Radio, especially when I've got something to promote.
Well, that's what we have you on here. We're doing a week of programming around Heart of the City Festival. It's the 17th year, and you are doing a presentation Tuesday afternoon, 3 p.m., called My Art is Activism. And I hope maybe you could share a little bit about what that means to you. Why did you pick that title?
Well, I've been an activist most of my life, and I got a Downtown Eastside Small Arts Grant because I was on the committee for a number of years during projects and all that, and I stepped off for a year, and then I said, hey, I'm almost 70 years old. I should start working on my art, and then thought about, what the hell is my art? And I was going to say, doing videos of this, that, and whatever. And I thought, I really need to get an art statement together. And that's my statement. My art is activism.
Let's go back to the second part of that, the activism. And I think some of our listeners will know you for a lot of your advocacy and work. Could you tell us a little bit, first of all, how you became an activist in the first place and kind of how that changed?
My feeling is that we are a species of ideas, words, and action. And I fell in love with words when I was a child. That's the English language. Literature and history were items of interest to me. And my hope was to become a lawyer, but I didn't. Because I got busted in my old hometown. It was a scandal, but I was named after a lawyer. He was a good friend of my grandfather's, and helped my grandfather out with some legal problems when my grandfather didn't have citizenship. And it just grew, and I decided I would be an activist, mainly through a Medicare debate we had in Saskatchewan. I think I was in grade 6.
This is the debate for public health care under Tommy Douglas.
Yes. And I don't know. I thought I had a way with words and I would have been a writer. But alas, I'm not talented or whatever it is, you know, to do that kind of work. I would have had a career in theater if I had the talent. But I managed to do community television. So, and community television gave me a platform.
You've been involved in Access TV for years, right here on the Downtown East Side.
Well, it was all kinds of things. You know, I mean, first of all, you got to give credit where credit was due, you know, with people with the vision. Community television was the community channel for a while. People thought it boring. People thought the long form wasn't so great, production values, and on, but some of it was very good, and I recognized that because, like you in a way, I had journalism aspirations after I got busted, or I had, I wanted to be a disc jockey, but I couldn't get into the program. So, I mean, it was that. So, I mean, it's just a progression of my life, and I lucked into things. I ended up selling advertising for a community newspaper, Montreal Lens, Chinese Canadian Press, and then I ended up writing stories, and then I was asked to host a community television show, and in some ways, you could say the rest is history. I became a community historian.
It's such a testament to the power of community media in telling histories, in creating histories. And we say that journalism is the first draft of history, but I think community media actually is the scribblings that form the first thoughts that people might have about things.
And my art is activism part two is a first draft of videos that I had produced, and they go back to 87, I think. And I happened to have archived some of them on YouTube. So I went back to YouTube and looked at, hey, what do I do? Last year I did part one. This year I'm doing part two. Everything is new on, well, Facebook, which is the platform I'm using to try and get my work out.
Two of the videos you're going to be sharing at the event at Heart of the City kind of deal with themes that you've really been captivated by and have really shown leadership on over the decades. One is the fight for the soul of Chinatown, and the other is redress at the Chinese Cultural Center. And I wondered if you could talk about those two ideas, the fighting for the soul and also what redress means.
Well, the fight for the soul of Chinatown actually came out of a journalism piece that I was writing and actually got paid for, David.
Congratulations. You deserve it.
From the Georgia Strait, no less. And so I was asked to write something, and I did, and it was about the safety measures in 2001 when Chinatown rose up in arms, gave safe injection sites and, you know, that kind of stuff. I thought I had to take a stand, and I did, and I wrote this article. And Charlie Smith wasn't the editor of the Georgia Strait then, but whoever was the editor said, this is good. We'd like to print it. And I think I got a few $100 for it. that was great. And then I started writing other commentaries and opinion pieces. That was that. And I was doing community television. So I was pretty caught up in what was on the ground, so to speak.
You've had a bunch of bylines in the Georgia Strait since those days. One of the themes that you keep returning to is justice for all people in Vancouver and the idea of a just and honorable redress. And I wondered if you could talk about what that means. I know that there's been a lot of efforts around redress, but often the government seems to think that it just means apologizing for things and doing no more.
Well, I just put something up on Facebook, and, you know, the power of an apology, you know, is with the receiver. By that, I mean, you can give as many apologies as you want, but if I don't accept your apology, then your apology is useless. To me. Now, you can call me a spoiled sport, you can call me stubborn, you can call me whatever you want, but the Chinese Canadians, and they are Chinese Canadians now, have been treated quite badly in this country since, well, its founding. And after that, you know, the Chinese have been, you know, on native land, so since the 1949 gold rush, I believe my family can trace its roots back to a grand uncle or something like that came over for that. And we have been trying to be accepted as equal participating, and we've had quite a struggle. We not only had to struggle against the climate and the geography, we had to struggle against the people. And it was not until 1947, 62 years of head tax and exclusion, that the Chinese in Canada, even if you were born here, could become citizens of Canada. That's how long. And then there were a whole bunch of programs, and I'm a result of that program. It's rather complicated. I'm a paper son. I'm my grandfather's son. I was brought to Canada to learn the laws and customs of Canada, i.e. be a lawyer. And I screwed that up by getting busted. That's what my grandfather's lawyer friend told me, because I believe that he thought I was going to take over his law practice.
Can I ask you what you got busted for? You've mentioned it a few times. I'm sure we're eager to hear the story.
I and one of my best friends then, childhood friends, also named Sid, were busted for possession of hashish in the late 60s.
It's actually amazing you didn't write for the Georgia Strait sooner, Sid.
I was too busy.
That was the scene, though.
That was my big problem. I was too busy trying to make a living. I had socked away some money and foolishly blown a lot of it, and had to make a living selling advertising based on the fact they said, if you can sell stocks, you can sell anything because you're selling an idea.
It's interesting that the drug war was so much based on racist ideas, and there's some great scholarship out of Susan Boyd at University of Victoria about how particularly laws against marijuana and hash and opioids were very much targeted at Asian Canadian communities.
Well, it's the truth. It's the truth. I don't know what more I can say to that.
Yeah, and there's some great museums if people want to learn more about some of this history. The Chinese Canadian Museum has an exhibit on Pender Street now, and the Vancouver Museum actually has some very, very compelling displays about the attacks on Chinese businesses and on the Chinese community, on top of the head tax and people's treatment in the fishing industry, for instance.
Yeah, well, that's today. What I'm dealing with is the remnants of our, and I'm not so sure they're remnants anymore, given what's happening in the States, the remnants of our colonial ideology. And I think to a great extent that's what we're dealing with. You know, it's being called cancel culture, but it's about justice and honor.
Tell me more about that. What does honor mean to you in that context?
Well, if you look at why people apologize, an apology should be restorative. It means that the giver giving the apology is seeking redemption. And then, of course, the two bookends to that are justice and honor for the aggrieved party.
Is that why you use the word redress? Because I know that as a noun, that means like to give compensation or to set right a grievance.
It means making it right if you can. Doing our level best to make it right. And Lord knows, I live in the heart of the downtown East Side. I can walk a half a block to Chinatown. And I choose to live where I live because I guess it's the way I grew up. My grandfather and grandmother taught me a lot about fairness and taught me a lot of things. I've written about them. People are just beginning to recognize some of this stuff, but I'm continuing because I'm retired now and I have the time, and this is stuff I've always meant to do but didn't have time to do it because I was so producing a community television show and I was trying to make a living. And looking after my children, you know, the best I could, given the circumstances. And this COVID thing has kind of made me a hermit. And I was sitting around for a month or two thinking, oh, what should I do? And I said, what's wrong with you, Sid? You got a lot to do. And I've been loving it. I've been cooking my own meals and eating more healthy. I see a few friends, and separately, and I don't know. I've just had the time to think ideas, you know, words or symbols, and action. And my action is sitting here at home thinking up ideas about what kind of action can be taken given the circumstances.
When you started in film, and I understand that you were self-taught as a camera person and producer, did you see it as art then, or is that something that's changed as more recently to see the work you're doing as a type of art?
Well, I've never called my work art until now. Because I never thought it was. To me, it was just production. You go in, you get a show ready, you do your show, and you leave. And you hope it doesn't give you an ulcer. So I just saw what I did as work. And I was self-employed. I have been self-employed for most of my life since 81 or 82. So you have a lot of freedom to do stuff. I work kind of like freelance advertising sales. If you can sell advertising for a Chinese language newspaper and you don't speak the language or read it, you got to be good. And that's just making connections and learning their needs and benefits and how you can help. That's straight out sales. What do they need? And don't sell them stuff they don't need. That's the biggest problem.
Could you tell me about this clip, Jim Wong Chu's interview? That's one of the earlier clips you'll be showing at your talk.
Equal opportunity. In early Canada, when railways were highways, each stop brought new opportunities. There was a rule. The Chinese could only ride the last two cars of the train. That is, until a train derailed, killing all those in front. The Chinese erected an altar and thanked Buddha. A new rule was made. The Chinese must now ride the front two cars of the train. That is, until another accident claimed everybody in the back. The Chinese erected an altar and thanked Buddha. After much debate, common sense prevailed. The Chinese are now allowed to sit anywhere on any train.
Jim Wong Chu from 1987, what can you tell us about it?
Well, my dear late friend, Jim Wong Chu, was a visionary. And we hung out. We hung out before he got married. That's how long we've known each other. And we hung out. We did stuff. He introduced me to Charlie Chin, an Asian American sort of troubadour and singer-songwriter, and we just talked about a lot of things. And Jim has had an incredible influence on Asian Canadian, particularly Chinese Canadian. He was an original member of Pender Guy Radio, which was, I believe, the co-op radio show
That's right.
for Chinese Canadians back in the 70s. I met Jim in the early 80s, and we struck up a friendship, and we remained friends all this time until he passed. And it's my homage to him. I open the show with Jim's interview, what I'm doing, and I close it with the poem that he recites, which I gave you.
I appreciate you sending that to us, and what a piece of history, both for you to share your story about knowing Jim, but also his words directly with us. People will probably know his work from the magazine Rice Paper, which he founded, as well as the Asian Canadian Writers Workshop, which kind of through its award helped really launch the careers of people like Madeline Tien and Rita Wong.
Like I say, I open it with acknowledgement of First Nations, and I close it with credits, and not enough credits. I'd like to talk about that because I have worked with literally hundreds of volunteers over the years, and many of them have become good friends. And, you know, last year I did this with my good friend Sean Gunn, who's a musician and wrote Head Tax Blues and Hockey Night in Chinatown. You know, it's so I don't know what the word is. I'm going back to people who I never appreciated as artists. I never saw my friend Sean. I saw him as a musician and all that, but not really as an artist. And one thing to talk about is Jim talks about in the opening piece about Guan Gong, which I talk about, the patron protector of warriors, writers, artists, and minstrels in Chinese lore, a great general.
Well, I mean, it's such an interesting thing. The patron saint of writers and minstrels, I think Jim fits right in there. Warriors, writers, all together.
He was a general. He was a warrior. Mm. And famous, one of the most famous, I don't think deities with the right word, but maybe immortals, because his righteousness and loyalty and devotion. Is famous, you know, like he's known for that, for his righteousness, loyalty, and devotion. He's both a poet and a scholar and a general. Very famous, Guan Gong. Used to be in every Chinese shop and store in the old Chinatowns, you know, like before he was revived by writers like David Henry Wang and Frank Chen. And others.
And when we talk about the warrior spirit and writers and minstrels, I think Jim really captured that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jim had a big part in that.
A huge part, to say the least.
A huge, huge part. I mean, Jim was Mr. ACWW, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I remember helping Jim form it. That's when we got together and started talking about things. And, you know, Jim and I took a bit of a bath during the Gopher Broke Festival at the Fire Hall, you know, because we put our money where our mouth was.
Well, I really appreciate all of your time today, Sid, and I look forward to your talk at Heart of the City. Thank you so much for being with us.
3 p.m. It's online. 3 p.m. tomorrow.
Great, and good luck with that, and stay healthy.
Okay, and you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Sid Chautan is a documentary filmmaker and longtime activist. You can hear his talk, My Art is Activism, at 3 p.m. on Tuesday as part of Heart of the City Festival. It's online and free. Donations are accepted, however. You can register at heartofthecityfestival.com. Heart of the City runs with over 100 events until Sunday.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.